Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Second 15 for Tennessee. We approach 6 minutes to go, first quarter. Mariota, rainbow, end zone, caught, touchdown, Corey Davis, fantastic grab.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Four-man rush, Utah. Now two-man rush, Herbert. Way downfield, caught by Schooler, and go down with 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 2 seconds. Oh, they let the clock run instead of stopping it. And Herbert with 1 second remaining.
Oh, how's that take 2 seconds?
They're going to reset the clock. They will.
Yeah, that doesn't
Time
take
expired.
2 seconds.
Time expired.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague and Andy Johnson in with you on this Monday afternoon, where there is so much news we can't even get to it all on a Monday.
We got a lot. I always love opening up the Better You Today text line and the first thing being a shot on a wrong prediction. I love that about Mondays. First text of the show: Hey, Dirt, Jets didn't quite cover against the Bills, did they? No, they did not. They were down 31-0 in that game. It was 31-3 at the half.
That was a painful one for the J-E-T-S, Jets.
How about Matt Barkley off of the sidewalk just leading the team to a win? Now they're taking him out. They're putting Josh Allen back in.
I think...
ride the hot hand.
I think Josh McCown heard you touting him over Sam Darnold, and Sammy D said, he's better. Okay, let's find out.
Let's see this. We even had a guy in the office that was, he needed a quarterback to start in fantasy this weekend. He rattled off like five or six different names of guys that were available in his leagues. And McCown was one of the names. I was like, dude, of course you go with McCown in that situation. Are you kidding me?
Did he go with him?
He did. And I believe he got him 0.7 points.
Yeah. Blake Bortles was another name, and he got him 20. If he would have chosen Blake Bortles.
Oh, did Blake Bortles have a decent weekend?
No, but he always randomly gets you 20 points in garbage time.
They're down. He throws a touchdown late.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a weekend of a lot of wrong. I was 0-3 Sprague in the line.
Yeah, we went 0-4 in our parlay. I had a college football parlay that I didn't even make it to Saturday.
Yeah, Fresno State screwed you.
Didn't even make it to the weekend. I had a five-teamer that was eliminated on Friday night.
Vegas got hammered last week. I think this weekend they did pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, it was a good bounce-back week for Vegas. They took a lot of my money. Now it's going to be a battle to regain the wins.
But that's why another week happens, is so you can bet. You win it back by betting it back, baby. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I almost don't know what you want to start with. Should we start with the just atrocious decision going on in our building, or should we start with Bend?
Ooh. I think both of these have some a decent amount of teeth to them. I'll let you pick. Choose your own adventure.
Okay, I'm going to start with the building.
Okay.
Because Bend, I mean, look, we had a great time.
We have a great time every year. From what we remember, it's a really fun trip.
I would imagine it's hard not to have a great time on your little jaunt.
Yeah, I'll say this year, too. This is probably the...
Now, did you boys go stag? Was it a boys' weekend? Or
no.
Did
no.
the significant others
they went. This will always be a significant other trip.
Okay.
Yeah, but my fiance did not go on the actual ale thing. She's in school right now. She's got some tests this week, so she wanted to study. So I was unsupervised on the ale trail.
Then
you added...
I'm sorry, Sprague.
You added to the fact that Oregon and Utah was going on at that exact same time, and the emotional swings that were happening throughout the course of that game. Yeah, this was the deepest I've ever dove in, I think, on our 4 years of doing the AL trail.
Yeah, but I'll give you this. You did an exceptional job hiding, I think, your true anger.
After the game? Yeah, because we were all at a dinner at the end of the game, and I was watching at a bar. And I just pounded like three more
IPAs. You didn't
IPAs
go Sean and, Payton and break some fire alarms?
No, I did not.
You also used my phone. The battery got drained. Dirt was using my phone.
I was watching the game on your phone the entire time.
By any means necessary. It was like, hey, it works.
the non-football people in the group were just making fun of me the entire time. Like, why is this guy glued to technology and we're in beautiful Bend? I'm like, look, I'm enjoying all the beer. I'm enjoying the tours. Just allow me to stare down every once in a while to watch them punt again.
We did finally get the realization of non-sports guys' life.
Yeah.
And the judgment in which they gave us for following games on cell phones was pretty... It was pretty amazing to listen to.
Right.
Wait, why do you have to watch that game? Well, we work in sports radio. Why can't you just, like, go read about it? Because we talk about it. Yeah, we want to talk about what we saw.
The analogy I always use, it's like taking a test without studying. And trust me, I did that a lot, and it's not easy. Taking a test without studying is a very difficult thing to do. And if you don't watch a game...
How's that GPA?
It's right. You know, hey, D's equal degrees. But that's besides the point. It's difficult to do. So if you watch, it makes it a lot easier to talk about during the week. But they could not wrap their heads around that.
No, they could not. We had a coworker that couldn't wrap his head around it. And then he had a friend who was just one of the nicest guys. I think he really liked drugs. So he was a different individual altogether.
Yes.
Hello.
It was a fun trip, okay? We had a good time, you know?
We didn't do the drugs.
No, we didn't.
If that's what you think I'm implying.
We were not inferring that.
I didn't need to do drugs with the amount of alcohol I consumed. I spent the remaining 30 minutes of my night just drinking water straight and eating McDonald's.
Yeah.
Going, God, I don't want to be horrible tomorrow.
Yeah, well, the Sunday at the Bendale Trail for me is always a brutal day because now that the fiance goes, it's like my day of I have to pay it back. So she indulges me on the day of drinking and whatever we want to do on Friday night. Then Sunday, it's like her day in Bend. So she wants to go shopping. So I had to walk around for a good four and a half hours yesterday morning, kind of an empty stomach, a cup of coffee, was not feeling great.
Yeah.
And then drive the 3 hours back to Portland the Sunday afterwards is you pay for it a little bit.
I left at 7:30.
Yeah, you got out of there early. I'm very jealous of you.
I had to scrape ice off a car.
Right.
I had to pack the bags. I had to load them all, and I was out of there. And I was just like, you know what? This was probably the better choice. I love Bend.
Right.
I kept thinking of ways yet again how we could do the show there and just live because
just stay in Bend.
I would much rather live over there than I would rather live here. But ultimately, I thought it was the better decision.
Could you go without like Blazer games or?
Yeah.
Really?
If I could watch the Blazers, I'm fine. Because you can still drive over twice, three times a year to go to a game.
You could, yeah, and stay in town for the night.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually a shorter drive, assuming the weather's not a problem, to either Corvallis or to Eugene from Bend.
What's the average game do you think like a listener of ours goes to per year? I would say under 5.
Yeah. The average? Yeah. You're probably right on that. 41 home games. Yeah. 5 I would probably put the number at.
Right.
Like the over-under number.
Yeah. I could
easily. You got your diehards, your season ticket holders that go to more, and then you pick a handful of them.
Would you rather stay here for that reason?
No, that just is a sports reason that I thought of.
Yeah, I'd rather be over there. I love Portland. I will always love Portland, but I think Bend is better.
I discovered a new favorite brewery over there, Monkless.
Monkless,
was
yes.
A spot that we went to that we had not been to yet. It's like a Belgian-style brewery, so it was kind of different than all the other ones.
No hops.
No. Yeah, it was.
It's all yeast.
It was delicious, and they had a beer called the Festivus beer, and they do like a Festivus party every year while drinking this beer and the airing of grievances and the whole thing. And it was the best beer of the week. That one won my Dirt's Gold Award, whatever the hell that is.
That one was pretty good.
That was my favorite beer of the week, and I bought a couple of bottles of it and brought it home.
Crux had like a Russian stout at like 10.5%.
Yeah.
Smelled like racing fuel, and then it tasted delicious. Yeah. I think that might have been my favorite.
Just went down smooth.
It did go down smooth, and it's super heavy.
Yeah, if you've never been on the Bendale Trail, highly suggest it, man. It's beautiful, especially this time of year, because you're like, it hasn't started snowing yet. And you get a little crisp morning, but it's like 50 degrees and sunny. There's no rain. It's perfect weather. They bus you around in a van and take you to all these different breweries. It is an awesome day.
So thanks to our friends at Visit Bend. We do commercials. I know we do the advertising thing for them. We really mean it. They are amazing. They put on a great time while you're there doing the ale trail. All the breweries are fantastic. They show you the ins and the outs. You get to taste all the beers. It's always a wonderful time. It's probably one of the weekends a year I look forward to the most. So that was a great time in Bend. And now for the airing, you speak of Festivus, the airing of grievances.
Yeah.
I've got one. We are playing Christmas music in our building starting today.
Yeah, it started today.
Our sister station, brother station, Charlie.
We jumped in.
Is Charlie a guy or a girl? Have we figured that out?
I think that was always part of its mystique and
Okay.
A lure.
So it's a...
It's like Pat.
Okay. Anyways.
It's playing Christmas music
already. Four doors down, yeah. And they have speakers outside. They are blasting Christmas music. Today was the kickoff day, not to spoil any surprises for people out there. But
I have a feeling if you're listening to Charlie, you probably already noticed that they're playing Christmas music.
Well, in case the people are like, hey, I like to listen to this show, and then, hey, for whatever reason, I can catch a radio station some other time. Charlie's playing Christmas music. What the hell are we doing?
It's
November 12th.
November 12th. Isn't that the official turning of the calendar to Christmas season? Isn't that when we do it?
I don't know.
No.
We'll see what the ratings say.
I bet the ratings will
be
good.
The ratings spike, then we're playing Christmas music.
This is what upsets me, though. It's for that reason and that reason only. Not because it's great. Not because the demand is coming in via email.
Yeah.
We're just doing it to get those suckers that go, gotta listen to it all day.
Gotta have the Christmas
in
music.
In mid-November, we are blasting Christmas music.
The Christmas music battle is a vicious radio industry battle in December. I mean, that is a massive contest to see who can get the Christmas ears.
Yeah, we're competing. There's another station we're competing with, and that's the only reason we're doing it.
I think you want to be the first. You want to be the first one. It's like,
did we beat that station?
I don't know. I cannot confirm or deny if we beat them to the punch this year or not. I know last year we did, and I think it worked in the ratings, but... Yeah,
we beat them last year?
I
Swagger, do you know if we beat them, that other station?
I don't.
I'll do some digging on that post show, and I'll report back tomorrow.
Yeah, and they're one of those stations too. Charlie's one of those stations that like plays in like grocery stores and dentists and stuff.
It's pretty general, like
it's
top
just, you know,
40
we play
stuff,
everything
yeah.
kind of thing, you know. And so now that's what you have to look forward to is now when you go into like grocery stores and dentists and Papa Murphy's, wherever you go, where the radio is playing over the speakers, you might be exposed to some Christmas music at this early date.
Yeah, people are texting in, by the way, the other station I'm referring to, they're saying they're playing it now, too.
Oh, they jumped in, too? Okay.
So, what have we jumped the shark more on, pumpkin spice everything or Christmas music for 2 months?
Pumpkin spice everything, because Christmas is more enjoyable than pumpkin, so I don't mind having an extra couple of weeks of Christmas. Going too extreme into pumpkin is more egregious in my mind.
Well, I'm just going to point out very quickly, and then we're going to get going here. Christmas was special when it was like once a month, and now we're stretching this into two. We're just trotting right over the turkey.
Yeah, nobody cares about Thanksgiving anymore.
No, they don't.
Thanksgiving is probably more known for a holiday to go shopping for Christmas now.
Yeah, Black Friday.
Black Friday.
Right. So if you hear me humming Santa Baby, don't be mad at me. It's in the freaking hallways. We got a good show today. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. I love Jared Goff shooting his shot for Halle Berry and it actually working yesterday with an audible. We'll get to the NFL. Good weekend in the NFL yet again. College football, and we're going to start there. The Oregon Ducks, no starting quarterback, no starting running back for Utah, and the Ducks still lose yet again on the road. We'll start with Oregon next. You got Dirt and Sprague on the Fan. By the way, RIP to Stan Lee, the Marvel comic book legend, passed away at 95.
He always seemed like a really happy guy.
Can we somehow still get him in every comic book movie?
Yeah, he's in all of his movies. I'm not a big comic book or superhero guy,
yeah.
But I remember reading that. He's in like every one of his movies, isn't he?
Always has a cameo, yeah.
Yeah, it's some like whether it's a line or not, he's in there some way.
Yeah, he'll always be like a bus driver or a museum security guard, and he'll randomly just have like, holy smokes!
Right, one quick line.
Yeah, and you'll see him for
God,
a second.
God, Stanley! How much is that guy worth? It's got to be an ungodly amount of money, right?
Has to be starting with a B, right?
Because he created it, I saw in 1961, he started Marvel. And you think about, I mean, he's created Spider-Man, Black Panther, The Incredible Hulk, X-Men, Iron Man, and The Avengers.
I feel like the net worth online net worth online is saying $50 million?
That can't be true.
It's got to make more than that.
With how much all of those movies have grossed over the last 15, 20 years?
We're not comic book nerds enough to know if he sold Marvel, so he doesn't really get as big a piece of pie.
Yeah, touche.
I'm sure he was getting something being chipped off for him for all those movies, but I'd imagine it's more than $50 million. But he passed away at 95. What a life. That's a pretty cool life.
Think about what was going on inside that guy's head, too, to be able to create all these characters that people love.
Well, think about creating Black Panther in the 60s.
Yeah.
What that was probably like.
Very controversial.
Especially as a Caucasian.
Right.
All right, so let's go to football.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we have to. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't like this game very much just for the sheer fact of I don't trust your team on the road. They've got some road woos.
Road woos.
And kind of reared its ugly head yet again in Salt Lake City. Utah gets off to a 13-0 start. Oregon had 4 yards their first three possessions combined.
They had 4 yards at the end of the first quarter.
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And they battled back. They eventually took the lead off of that block punt. They got a touchdown. But ultimately, they held that for 87 seconds before Utah responded. And they get the win. They beat Oregon 32-25. Yet another road loss. And now Oregon, at the best, will be 8-4. They got ASU this weekend for some Pac-12 after dark. And then they will, of course, finish with the Civil War.
Yeah, finally one of those dreaded 7:30 home games on Saturday night for senior night. This one stings because of what you mentioned, the slow start again. I don't know why that continues to happen and what it is about getting off to a good start, especially on the road, but it's clearly a problem that they have not solved. It stings because Utah was playing with a backup quarterback and a backup running back, and Jason Shelley, while he did scramble around and make a couple of big throws, at times in that game was pretty underwhelming, and I thought it was disappointing how he was able to throw the ball for 262 yards against you. You can't spot a good Utah team a 13-0 lead on the road. You can't do that. And you look at once they were finally able to settle in after it was 13-0, they played good football the rest of the way. I mean, they had the touchdown pass, had the chance to kick a field goal at the end of the half. They missed it, and Utah capitalized. Then they came out like they were shot out of a cannon in the third quarter and outscored them 17-3 early in the second half to get right back in that game. And as you mentioned, take the lead. And then the defense collapsed on you again. It just kind of was, once again, a snowball problem of not a great game plan early, not adjusting to no Hansen because they couldn't run the ball. The offense took too long to wake up. The defense was giving up too many chunk plays and too many points early on when the offense needed some help settling into that game. And then finally, when you were able to settle in and take a lead, the defense once again disappeared. The defense was great early in the second half. I think on 4 of their first 5 second half possessions, Oregon held them to a punt. They had the one field goal. And then Oregon takes the lead. All of a sudden, there's a random phantom personal foul call on the kickoff. Utah gets it at the 40. Just like that, they take the lead back in the rest of history.
I didn't see why that was called.
I didn't either. I didn't read about it either. Right, we were pretty drunk watching that game, and I went back and rewatched it yesterday when I got home, and I was curious because it felt like it was such a quick thing because we were watching, and the next thing I know, I look up, and Utah's got the ball on like the 2-yard line going in. And you're like, what? What? How did this happen? Pacto Network didn't show the personal foul call on the kickoff, so I didn't see any tweet. Maybe somebody can help me on that. But it was a touchback, and then Utah started with it on the 40-yard line. And then on top of that, on that drive that Utah took the lead back, whatever it was, 29-25 at that point, they called a pass interference call on Thomas Graham on second and goal. That was an atrocious call. The ball was uncatchable. There was no PI, and it would have been 3rd and goal from the 5, and Utah was settling for field goals all game. Instead, you handed it to them, 1st and goal on the 2, because the foul occurred in the end zone, and the very next play they scored a touchdown. The refs really screwed that one up.
You know, we could go a few different directions here with Oregon. You know what I walked away with thinking, and I know this is going to sound a little crazy. I think there's going to be some Duck fans that, given what we've seen from them the last few weeks, there's some out there that think they could potentially finish 6-6. I think they'll beat Oregon State in the Civil War, and we'll get to the bet on that stuff in a couple. It's next week, actually.
Next week, Civil War week.
But they don't play well on the road. That Cal game, by the way, that looks like a great win right now, the way Cal's playing football.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I mean, we have not seen them play good football for over a month now. And we know they're dealing with injuries, but I'm just wondering, like, at what point here does the alarm sound off? You know, 6-4, 3 of those wins are patsies.
Yeah, so, it's non-conference.
So you're sub 500 after your non-conference right now. ASU's coming to town, and maybe you can right the ship because you play at home. And I don't know. I look at Oregon, and I think they're in real danger of potentially being 7-5 or at the worst 6-6. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I've been honest about Oregon State. I don't think they're a great team. I think they showed that this weekend. They got housed. But Oregon is not good on the road. I think their defense has shown that they're susceptible to the run now. And I'm just really curious where Oregon's going to finish their season and how they're going to finish, because where they at with Washington versus what they're at right now, it couldn't be more different in terms of the feel for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a completely different football team, and it has been now. This has been a problem. I mean, the only one they have in the last 4 weeks is the win over UCLA at home, which at times was an ugly win. So I think the feeling of Duck fan will depend on how the next 2 weeks go. This isn't a terrible loss. It sucks because Utah was playing with a couple of backups at key positions, and that's why I flipped my pick late last week when Moss was out and we knew Shelley was going to start all week. But you lost a close game against a decent Utah team. That's a tough place to go in and play. You battled back in the second half. You took the lead, and then some things bounced against you late. You gave up the touchdown, and you fell just short. That, to me, is not a bad loss. This isn't what you looked like against Arizona. I mean, that, to me, was a completely different conversation of you came out flat, you did not show up, and you got your ass kicked in that football game. That didn't happen on Saturday night. You battled back. So I think watching how they can turn this thing around in the next 2 weeks, if you can finish at 8-4, that to me is not a terribly disappointing season. I did predict 9-3 at the beginning of the year, and you had a puncher's chance at getting there, and that's obviously gone out the window the last couple of weeks. But if you finish at 8-4, find your way into a bowl game, and you get that win, you finish 9-4, I don't think anybody's complaining with the recruiting class you have coming in. But if you can't bounce back, and Arizona State's going to be a tough matchup because Benjamin's the best running back in the conference yardage-wise, at least this year.
Yeah.
We know how good N'Keal Harry is. I mean, Arizona State can sling it around a little bit. And if they come in to beat you at Autzen, then you don't look good against Oregon State. I think it's a completely different conversation.
Yeah, somebody says ASU hasn't won at Autzen since 2004, so that's something to bear in mind.
That sounds about right. You're at home. If you were at ASU, I would be more scared about this week than being at home.
Here's the only thing I would say about that, too, because there's no doubting Oregon at home versus Oregon being on the road. It is a much different feel. But let's go back to the UCLA game for a quick second. If UCLA isn't shooting themselves in the foot or they go Wilton Spate, I don't. Maybe Oregon wins that game, but I think it's a much closer contest. And even with that UCLA win, because we broke that down, I still think you had a lot of people that didn't feel great about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, despite winning by 21, I think some looked at that game and said, score doesn't indicate how that game maybe felt for some. And so that's why even coming back at home, I don't know if the confidence has really shifted for fans of going, oh, we're going to get to 7 wins this week. And maybe it happens in 2 weeks when you go to Corvallis. But I think right now, given what ASU is potentially capable of through the air and where Oregon's defense has been, I think there's a real chance and opening here for Duck fan maybe looking at this game from the outside saying, yeah, I could see a loss here the way we're playing right now, especially defensively. They just look vulnerable. I thought it was a good point in the Oregonian. I want to point that out. I forget the beat writer's name, so apologies. But I thought he just boiled it down and said it's sheer talent. They're dealing with the linebacker injuries right now.
Yeah, Pelu's done for the year.
Their defensive line hasn't quite gotten the pressure we thought it would from early on in the season. I mean, how often have we mentioned Jalen Jelks' name this year?
Yeah, I haven't heard him much.
He's had a little bit of a letdown year in the secondary. We have seen they are open to giving up big plays, and it's just what ASU is going to be able to do coming in. It's a question mark, man. It really is. How do you feel about Oregon right now, sitting 6-4? Better You Today text lines 55305. Where do you think they're going to finish? And then we'll get into some other Pac-12 football as well. You got Dirt and Sprague back with more. Get into some Pac-12 stuff here. Wilcox just handed USC the pink slip that they're going to hand to Clay Helton with their win in the Coliseum over the weekend. Washington State continues their winning ways. They rebound after that Cal game, which, you know what, that's actually looking like a pretty decent little win. Not that Cal's a top 25 team, but Cal's playing good football right now.
And you were on the road, you ran away from it. That's exactly how you needed to win that game.
Yeah, they won in convincing fashion. So we'll get to that. We got our NFL whip around. The GOAT beats the GOAT, according to Dirt.
That's right, baby.
In the NFL. We'll talk some more of that as well. But we were talking about Oregon, who they have ASU 7:30 kick. So please join the postgame show. We will start that at midnight. We'll hang out, and then we'll hand it off to Mike and Rashad for Sunday morning.
At least you don't have to drive back from Eugene at like 1:30 in the morning.
Dare I call you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be up. I'm driving back because that game will get over probably around 11. It usually takes about an hour and a half to do the postgame stuff. So
yeah,
I will probably be hitting the road to come back around 12:45.
Okay, so we're going to have you covered for that. And then, of course, we'll have the Civil War stuff going on a week from Friday. I can't believe the season's wrapping up.
That's crazy.
It's just like that. It's over. But Oregon sitting at 6-4, some differing opinions here at the Better You Today text line at 55305 on just what they've made of Oregon. You know, coaching, talent, injuries, regressions, progressions.
I have found it the last few weeks, because I don't think anybody that's talked about Oregon has had anything different than anybody else. It's really been like, what the hell? This person hasn't played well. This group isn't playing well. The coaching is questionable. This is year one. They're not good on the, like, every opinion seems to kind of be the same, but just said in different ways.
Right.
I've really found it tough to put into thought how I have felt or what I've seen from Oregon for about a month now.
Yeah, it's been a very confusing season.
I feel like you and I, if we're being realistic about it, I think we see a lot of the same things. But I think when I convey something, you kind of look at me like, I don't agree. But then you say something and I'm like, I do agree on it. Like, I'll just use UCLA. They won that game by 21.
They did.
But I think if you watch that game, the defense was getting shredded by the running game. UCLA was able to move the ball. Once the quarterback change happened for the Bruins, he was able to move it around through the air a little bit.
Yeah, but that was a one-score game in the third quarter.
And
right?
that's what I'm saying is, I think the game does not reflect through the score. It was more you had to watch and you see the final. Those are two different feels. I just feel like Oregon has been an entirely different team for about a month now.
They have. There's no disagreeing with that. I also just kind of look at that's the way the Pac-12 has gone the last month. I mean, UCLA almost beat ASU at ASU this past weekend. That's why I don't look at that as like, well, just because maybe you got some help with special teams, you know, mistakes and turnovers from UCLA, and that's the only reason you won, it's a down thing. I just think that's the thing. Right now, to me, honestly, it's Washington State and then everybody else. Stanford has shown that at times. Utah has shown that in some of their games. ASU has had some head-scratching moments. USC has fallen off. Cal's had big wins and bad losses. That's just kind of the nature of the Pac-12 this season. Everybody's jumbled together. And I think a lot of the way people feel about this program and the direction is going to depend on how the next 2 weeks go. It really doesn't matter to me. If you lose, I guess the question still remains, how did you lose? You asked me that on Friday about if they lose to Utah, how am I feeling? And I just responded with, how did you lose? How did the game go? And you didn't get your ass kicked like you did at Arizona. You got off to a bad start, which is something you don't want to see again because that's been their problem all year. But they fought back and they had the lead in the fourth quarter. I'm not overly pissed about it. I'm not shocked that you lost that game because of what we've seen now. This is who Oregon is. And then you add on the injuries of Stephen Jones getting hurt. You were playing without three or four offensive linemen at times in that game. All of your middle linebackers, it feels like, are out at this point in the season. And those kind of things are rearing its ugly head at the wrong time of the year for Oregon, unfortunately. But they do have a chance. They're at home, and I think that's a game that they're the favorite in Vegas, as in my opinion they should be because of the way they played at home and because of how up and down Arizona State has been this year. And then you get Oregon State in the Civil War, and I think if you close at 8-4, a lot of maybe the panicking or jumping off of a cliff that's happening in some segments of the fan base, we'll look back on it and say, just take a deep breath. Things will be okay.
What is it if they somehow lose that last game at 6-6?
Then it's a panic mode. It really is. I mean, you're pressing the button pretty hard if you finish the season 6-6.
And that's what I wonder too is, just the crystal ball, what that does for him going into the offseason. We know that's a guy that works a lot. I mean, he's talked about it with us on the show all season long of how many hours he's putting in, and to falter on the road yet again. And maybe a moment you thought you had an opportunity because the quarterback wasn't playing and Moss being out. But I did this on Friday. I was not going to be shocked at all if Utah was able to still run the ball, even with Armon Shine.
And they did. They ran the ball for about 300 yards as a team.
I don't think there was any difference between their backup and Moss in terms of the execution and what they're able to accomplish.
Moss averages 120 yards, and Shine went for $174.
Exactly. And so let's give Moss this. Maybe he goes for $190. I don't know.
Right, right.
But I didn't feel like that was a game changer for me. I still kind of looked at it the same. And, I said it as well. Prove it to me on the road. I know they beat Cal this year. But outside of that, I think they have 3 wins in their last 12. They're 3-12 since 2016.
They've won road win each of the last 3 years now.
It's been a stretch for them to get a win on the road right now. And the last thing I think you can afford to do is drop one at home. And even if they're going to be the favorite and maybe by double digits in the Civil War, I might pick them to win that. But overall, I can still see why they'd be susceptible to maybe having a pretty close game with the Beavers and having a heart attack at 6-6.
Yeah, I think that was the part of the game on Saturday that was the head scratchers. If you told me that Oregon was going to score 25, I would have felt good about their chance to win. I defensively, I thought you would be able to do something against Utah to slow him down with backups at each of those positions, and you couldn't. And it wasn't like Shelley, you know, was just lighting you up all day. In fact, he was pretty bad in the third quarter, and defensively, Oregon did a good job, but it was chunk plays when they needed them the most that were really big backbreakers, especially early on when you just needed a couple of stops to try and settle into that game. And Utah came out, and I want to say they had six possessions in the first half, and they scored on five of them. Now, thankfully for Oregon, four of those five scores were field goals, and you were keeping them out of the end zone at least. But every chance you had for momentum, you couldn't really find it. And then that happened again late in that game where you scored to take the lead 25-22, and you just get one more stop there, and maybe Oregon goes on to win that football game. But we're having a completely different conversation right now of look how they bounced back, look how they played in the second half. They finally made adjustments, and the defense, they went through them with ease en route to a touchdown that put them back ahead, and then Oregon couldn't counter back with the score. So I thought defensively that was the bigger disappointment to me. Oregon has been...
You think they're regressing or... Because that's getting brought up
like
now,
it,
too.
It feels like it, especially against the run. The way UCLA ran the ball against you and the way Utah ran the ball for 232 yards at 5 yards a pop, that's a big number.
I thought it was a pretty good point. I keep citing this. I read the Oregonian piece as like 10 takeaways or whatever, but the one that jumped out to me was... They knew UCLA really could only move the ball with Dorian Thompson-Robinson running it, and they did. So, like, I think that's, like, an area where, as a Duck fan, you would go, yeah, we knew they were going to run the ball, and it did not matter. They still were able to run the ball. That's a concerning thing, I think, for Jim Levin.
Well, and Utah's the same way. You knew.
And now you got Eno Benjamin this weekend.
Yeah, he's the Pac-12's leading rusher at this point
in
the year.
He's having a great year.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing how they respond to that, and we'll have Mario Cristobal on tomorrow. We'll get his thoughts on it. Year one, I don't know. I find this really tough. I know some people go all in and tell you, oh, he's a bum, he's done, they suck, and other people pie in the sky, optimistic. I'm residing in the middle right now, and I found it very difficult to articulate what I've seen because I think the recruiting class is a valid thing to be holding on to. I think taking into account the talent you've had since Helfrich was there, which was only, what, two seasons ago?
Mm-hmm. I think 2 years removed from 4-8.
I think that's a valid thing. And then I also flip and I say, if Justin Herbert, you've got some 4 or 5-star kids in that program, there's no excuse to be playing the way that you are. I'm just kind of in the middle with it all. It's really tough.
Yeah, it's hard to have an official answer on it. It is. And I think, as always, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Because you're guessing either way, right?
Right?
Like, you're playing the guessing game. If I go on the air and say, Cristobal's a bum, he's not the guy, and he doesn't pan out, you're going to look like a genius. But if he does turn it around in 2 years, you're going to look like an idiot.
Right.
And if you go the other way and he doesn't ever get it turned around and the recruits are not what we think they are, then you're going to also look like an idiot. And I think that's kind of what's been tough for me is there's clearly some red flags going on offense and defense. But I'm just wondering how much this is year one, not having the talent that you want to play the style of football you want. It's a tough thing to figure out, especially for somebody who, like myself, I don't get all 22 film. I don't break down the film. So it's hard for me to really digest it all.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing, unfortunately for Oregon fans, is you're just going to have to give it time. And I know some people are unhappy with the way things have gone in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and understandably so. The way that you felt after the win over Washington to where you are now is about as far away as you could have come. And I don't think anybody saw this at 6-4 being where you would be 10 games into the season. But I don't like falling into that trap of calling for heads immediately. Like, that's like the go-to that fans always have. And there are times when it's right and you need to get there. And it was there with the way Mark Helfrich was kind of crashing this program into the side of the road. The recruiting was falling off. He couldn't find a quarterback. And you could just sense on the field the team wasn't rallying around him the way that they needed to. And it had run its course, and it was time for a change. But then even last year, you had people calling for Taggart's head because they couldn't do anything without Justin Herbert. And now we're 10 games into this season, and people want coaches to be fired and changes to be made. Unfortunately, you just have to have patience. And maybe it ends up being a bad thing to have patience because this isn't the right group and they don't get it figured out. But you're not going to know who a staff is and where they want to take a program and what the identity is going to be 10 games in. You're just simply not going to have it. You've got to give them a couple of recruiting classes, and you just kind of see where this thing goes over a couple of years. And that's where I'm settling on it right now, is see what the recruiting class looks like and then go out and see what you can do next year.
All right, we'll stay in the conference. Washington State, they continue their winning ways. And it's funny because everybody wants to count them out. And we see yet again why the national conversation is a bit ridiculous. We'll tell you what we mean by that next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. NFL whip around coming up. I do think one final thought on the duck conversation. I'm with people here. 6-6 is a big disappointment. That would be 3-6 after a terrible non-conference. That's absolutely a disappointment. But that's what year two would be for Crystal Ball. You got to lock up the recruiting class and see what you do next year.
Yeah, that just adds to the importance of year two, no doubt
about
it.
Pressure with year two would be huge if they go 6-6.
That's the biggest disappointment for me this year is that you haven't answered coaching questions during the regular season. Like that, to me, whether it was 10 wins, 9 wins, 8 wins, 7 wins, like that number didn't necessarily matter. It was just a matter of do you feel like you have a lot of confidence in the group? And that's the unfortunate part about it.
But wouldn't 7-6 kind of give you answers to the coaching stuff?
Well, I think, again, all losses are not created equal. Are you showing up like you did against Arizona? Or are you losing like you did on Saturday night? Because to me, those losses are drastically different. The way that you played against a good team and a bad team, in my mind at least.
Well, one team that responded pretty well was Washington State. They almost suffered a loss at home against Cal. They escaped that one, and Cal's playing good football and probably just got Clay Helton fired after their comeback win in the Coliseum. So kudos to our friend Justin Wilcox, his brother Josh. That was a kick-ass win for them. I think they held USC to 0.76 yards per play
dominating
in the second
effort.
Half. It was unbelievable. But Washington State responds, and they thumped Colorado 31-7. And did you notice the team that's ahead of Washington State, the one everybody thinks is clearly better? They beat Oklahoma State by 1 point as 20.5-point favorites at home.
That they did. They gave up 500 yards through the air to Oklahoma State.
640 total yards, and that's the same Oklahoma State team that lost 2 weeks ago to 4-6 Kansas State and scored 12 points. Just want to point that out.
But no, it's a no-brainer that Oklahoma's better than Washington.
Not even close. Yeah. But Washington State continuing their winning ways and beating up on the Buffs.
Dude, this was great to see. I mean, I always allow teams a down weekend. It's just about surviving and advancing at this point. And that's what Washington State went through against Cal. Cal's a good defensive team, and we've seen that now for however many weeks in a row. They're the number one pass defense in the conference. They gave Washington State some problems. Washington State probably should have won that game by a wider margin, but all that mattered for them was that they won. And you wanted to see them bounce back. You say, okay, hey, look, we survived our close scare against an inferior team. Now let's go on the road and take care of business at Colorado. And it wasn't a bloodbath early, but it was a slow, methodical victory for them. It was 10-7 at the half. Defensively, they were great in the second half. I thought that was the biggest surplus for that game, was Washington State proving that they can go on the road and shut a team down like that. I mean, Stanford moved the ball with ease against them, but Stanford's better offensively than Colorado is. But to have that kind of performance on the road, I don't know if it's the statement win that they needed.
No, that's not. Washington will be their statement
win. Sure, but it wasn't a near miss against a bad team. And you had that with the team ranked ahead of you in the polls. And now you can again look to on tomorrow night and where these teams fall in the top 10. I brought it up last week. I don't think it's a no-brainer that Oklahoma's better than Washington State. You can have that opinion. That's fine. But when you point to resumes, to me, they are exactly the same. And I think Washington State has proven that they deserve the respect. And last week, Oklahoma barely beat Texas Tech, yet they were ranked ahead of LSU. LSU didn't fall behind Washington State. Washington State barely beats Cal, but for some reason, okay, those are different things. Now you have a difference again. Oklahoma barely beating about a 500 football team, and Washington State going on the road and taking care of business, and I hope the rankings reflect that.
Has Oklahoma beaten a top 25 team?
Not to my knowledge, no. I think their best win on the year is TCU.
No, it would be Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State has a better record than TCU.
Okay, well, that's
5-5.
But
they're 5-5, yeah. Maybe Army. I think Army's having a good year.
I don't think they're top 25.
No, they're not top 20. I don't think they have a top 25
Iowa
win.
Iowa State is currently in the top 25, so they do. They beat Iowa State 37-27, and that's a top 25 team with four losses, I believe.
And I think Washington State's is Utah right now.
Utah,
that's their top 25. And we'll see if Washington can, I don't know, somehow sneak in there. We'll find out the standings tomorrow, but I liked what I saw. I thought that was a good response. And one of my favorite moments of the weekend was Gardner Minshew putting a fake mustache over Mike Leach's face during his interview.
That guy's got to be in New York the way he's played this year.
You know, how many do they usually do, 4 or 5?
I think every year is different. You can have 3 to 5, just depending on the class.
Are there 4 players clearly more deserving of going to New York than him? We know Tua.
Tua's
going to
be there. Greer's going to be there. Kyler Murray will probably be there with the way he's played.
Is there a running back? I'm trying to think of a running back.
Let me look at the
Ed Oliver's had a good year, but he's also been banged up in Houston.
Jonathan Taylor leads the country in rushing with 1,500 yards.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Minshew has to be there, doesn't he? Doesn't he deserve to be one of the four?
I mean, I don't know how you argue against that. He leads the country in passing yards by about 500. 500 ahead of the Ole Miss kid.
Whoever Bama's playing, that Patsy, they're going to race them.
And yeah, this is SEC non-competitive week.
And then Tua could just have a mediocre game in the Iron Bowl. And as long as they win, I mean, that awards Tua. He's not losing the Heisman.
Unfortunately not, but that's the way it works. I look at Washington State, too. I think the schedule is set up perfectly for them. The way that you beat Colorado, now you get Arizona at home, and just don't allow yourself to look ahead on the schedule.
You're double-digit favorites in that game,
take care of business like you should at home. You get another night game up in Pullman. That crowd will be all nice and lubed up, and then you get a chance to go exercise some demons. Yeah. You know, Washington has had your number the last couple of years, and there's still a handful of folks out there that won't even insert you into this conversation because they don't think there's a chance in hell that you can win that game. And I think Washington State has proven as the year has gone on that this isn't your Washington State of old. Like, you have to get rid of these stereotypes in your mind because of what the program did 4 or 5 years ago. This is a different team, and some of the wins they have are quality. The only loss that they have on their resume is a game that they shouldn't have lost, that the Pac-12 screwed them with the non-targeting call. This should be an undefeated Washington State team right now, and they get a chance, I think, to prove a lot of people wrong in 2 weeks in the Apple Cup.
Hot take. I listened to WEEI today, our sister station. You know what they were talking about? They were talking about college football, which shocked me.
In Boston, huh?
Yeah. And they said that if Boston College runs the table, they're getting in the playoff. And I just thought, you guys don't watch college football, do you?
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah. They were dead ass serious, too. We got a loaded second hour. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, just stick to the Patriots, bud.
What?
We got a loaded second hour, a lot of NFL. We'll kick it off with the NFL whip around. That's next, hour two, back with more on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.